Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, listeners. I want to thank our good friends at Slipped Disc for their enthusiastic support of Speaking Soundly. Be sure to check out slippeddisc.com for the latest inside information on classical music now. Today's episode with the brilliant Anna Lapwood continues our celebration of Women's History Month as we feature female artists who have broken barriers and changed the world of music. British organist, choral conductor, and social media sensation Anna Lapwood has been a longtime champion of the organ. Now that videos of her performances have gone viral with millions of views on TikTok and Instagram, she's able to enjoy the fruits of her labor.
I had spent quite a long time trying to advocate for the organ. And again, the response that we'd love to, but nobody really likes the organ. It's a bit of a die instrument. It's not really relevant, sorry. So it's quite satisfying now to be able to say, it's relevant.
You're listening to Speaking Soundly, a backstage pass to today's biggest stars of the music world. I'm your host, David Krause, principal trumpet of the Metropolitan Opera. During each episode, you'll hear me speak with inspiring performers about their creative process and the personal journey that led them to the stage. I've been a musician nearly my entire life. I play in an orchestra all day long, surrounded by every instrument, but anytime I get a chance to see an organist play, I feel like I'm a kid at the circus watching a bear ride a unicycle or something. It's such a show. You're pulling on knobs, pressing buttons, playing three keyboards at once, stomping on pedals with your feet. What is it about the organ that makes it so fascinating to everyone, including jaded musicians like myself?
I think it's the coordination, right? Because we all know how challenging coordination can be on a musical instrument, and trying to make these physically very demanding things come across as effortless and somehow make music at the same time. And we're used to doing that perhaps on a couple of levels at the same time, coordinating two hands or breath control plus a hand, whatever it is. But then suddenly with the organ, you're looking at it on so many different levels. You've got the hands, the feet, as you say, the stops as well. So it's not just playing the notes, it's pressing all the buttons. And I think, yeah, I like the whole bear riding a unicycle. I think I'm going to use that. A lot of people say flying a plane. And actually, I know a couple of people who are organists and pilots, and they say it is considerably easier to fly a plane than play the organ.
Well, for me, it's definitely the feet. Like when you start playing with hands and feet, I think that's where you separate yourself from any other instrumentalist. It seems like second nature when I watch you do it, but it must have been an impossible task at first. How do you even get started to get used to that aspect of the instrument?
It takes a really, really long time. I think it probably took at least 8 years of playing before I started to feel even vaguely fluent with my feet. But it is really difficult. And I think something I always say to young organists is that you will feel like you are stuck, and you will feel like you are just incapable of coordinating in that way. And you feel stuck in that place for a really long time. But if you just keep pushing through it, it will eventually just click. It's such an annoying thing to hear, because you're like, but it isn't clicking. But it is just time, right?
And when did that happen for you? Do you remember a particular performance or practice session where you realized that your feet were doing something completely independent of your hands and you weren't really thinking about it?
I remember playing for one service as an organ scholar where I was doing a piece at the end of the service, and it was some Mendelssohn that had a big pedal solo at the end. And I remember getting the pedal solo right and coming down from the organ loft after I played it, and my parents going, who was playing the organ at the end? And I was like, that was me. And they were like, No, it can't have been you because it had a big pedal solo and you don't like using your feet. And I think so that was one of the moments I realized things were starting to change. But it needed me to be doing it every day under pressure to go through that kind of transformation. I think it is kind of a sink or swim thing where you just don't have a choice. You have to learn how to coordinate, how to do it. Because if you don't, people will notice.
It's a common expression to, you know, pull out all the stops, but you're one of the rare people in the world that have pulled out all the stops. So you got to tell me, what does it feel like?
It's mad. Everything just starts to shake. The whole bench, the whole room, the keyboards, and it is a feeling like no other. I mean, I used to play in orchestras a lot, and I remember the feeling of an orchestral tutti. That's sort of what it feels like, except you are the only person involved, and it's just all coming out of your fingers.
It sounds powerful, and I read that you are 5'3". Do you get that sense of empowerment from the sheer size of the instrument that you command?
Yeah, and actually a lot of audience members comment on it. Something that I often get after a recital is, but how can you create so much sound when you're so small? And I have to kind of remind them that it's not me creating the sound. Whereas if you're playing the trumpet, the amount of kind of air and effort you put in affects the volume. When you're playing the organ, however hard you press the key, it will make the same amount of sound. It's the organ that's doing all the work. But yeah, no, I think there is something to be said for being quite a small person and knowing you can be part of creating that much sound.
Well, as accomplished of an organist as you are, it's not the only instrument that you play. In fact, I read as a child, you would often introduce yourself as, "Hi, I'm Anna. I play 20 instruments." Is that true?
Yeah, I'm not proud of it. I was not the most I was a socially inept person a little bit when I was young, I think. It was my defining characteristic in my mind, but it possibly didn't win me many friends. When I kind of went to senior school and said that, everyone was like, "What?" And I think also I was including, I think, 5 different kinds of recorder in that 20 instruments.
So what were the instruments?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Piano, violin, viola, clarinet, flute. I'm going to run out. Singing, 5 different kinds of recorder, penny whistle, which is different to the recorder, as I told everyone, guitar, drums, organ. I always forget organ because it wasn't part of my list really in my mind at the time. And there's another 5 there that I can't remember. But I just was addicted to taking up as many instruments as possible, basically.
I've only ever played one instrument. I love the instrument that I play, but in part, it's just I couldn't deal with starting from scratch and finding the time to practice. Where did you find the dedication and motivation to put in all those hours on those different instruments as you progressed through them?
I mean, I had to focus down when I really decided to kind of take it very, very seriously. I mean, I actually remember when I was at primary school and I wanted to take up the harp. And I remember being told, if you want to be a musician, you can't take up the harp now. You have to focus at the age of 10. You have to focus and follow the path to that one particular instrument. And I was like, that's not me. I am a musician. I want to be a musician who is broad. And I love trying out all these different things. And I don't feel like I've necessarily found my instrument yet. And then I think when I was about 15, 14, I realized I was going to have to narrow it down a little bit. So I did piano, violin, harp, organ. And those are my kind of 4 main instruments. And I was doing all of those to kind of grade 8, and putting in a couple of hours or an hour each day, maybe on each. And I think I just didn't see the point in wasting the time doing other things when I really wanted to be making music. I loved the process of practicing and developing. And it's almost like when you pick up a good book and you just can't put it down and you want to get through to the end. I was the same with practice, I think.
It kind of makes sense then that all musical roads led you to the organ, because the organ can sound like all the instruments playing at once. Is that basically what attracted you to it?
I don't really know. I mean, so when I first took up the instrument, I did not like it at all. I found it really, really, really hard. But I think more importantly, music had always been my most natural form of communication. So whenever I couldn't say something in words, I knew I could kind of say it, at least in my own terms, in music. And suddenly I was there on the organ, having grade 8 on all these other instruments, and I was stuck on kind of grade 3 organ. Couldn't figure out how to use my feet. Really couldn't figure out how to communicate emotion on a binary instrument. And I hated it. And I just thought, oh, this is the most frustrating instrument in the world. What am I doing to myself? But I think there was something about that that made me really determined to figure out how to crack it. And it was like it felt like the biggest musical challenge I'd encountered up to then. And I don't think I then fell in love with it properly until, again, like relatively recently, in the last kind of 4 or 5 years, when I've started to find my own identity on the organ and explore some slightly different repertoire and sort of figure out who I want to be and what I want to say as a musician on that instrument.
As you were growing up, bouncing between these different instruments, it sounds like music was central to your identity as a child. What did your parents think? Did you grow up in a particularly musical household?
I remember early on, my mum was quite keen for me to go down the medicine route. But I think I said pretty quickly that I wanted to be a musician. I think sort of about 7 or 8, I was like, this is what I want to do. They were brilliant at encouraging that whilst also making sure I continued to pursue my academics and didn't let them drop off or anything, so that I could keep my options open. But they have been nothing but supportive all the way through. And just, I mean, they come to like every concert. And I think, yeah, they're relieved that music was the right choice.
Well, you went into it head on and obviously forged a very successful career, but I'm sure it wasn't easy as a young woman, given the fact that the organ is embedded within two male-dominated arenas like the church and higher education. Did you find this aspect difficult to navigate?
Yeah, I mean, when I started the organ, I was at an all-girls school, so had been part of this very kind of women are amazing environment, which meant I did not expect anything other than that going through life. And so then when I sort of went to university and entered the real world, or the university world at least, and people were suddenly sort of saying, oh, you're a woman and you play the organ. That came as a bit of a shock. And I had to kind of learn how to navigate that quite quickly. I've talked about the gender side of things a lot as part of what I do. And at the beginning, it was always just saying, well, this is a little bit ridiculous. Why are people making a fuss? But then there's this tension, because on the one hand, you want to talk about this stuff and you want to make them feel welcome and be a role model for them. But on the other hand, it's so easy, I think, for media in particular to kind of take just that out of what you're saying. So you can say 100 things about all sorts of topics and one thing about gender, and then everything becomes about the gender. And that's hard.
Well, one of those media clips that was focused on got my attention. I read that at 19 years old, you had an experience in a competition that would eventually inspire you to form the hashtag Play Like a Girl and get you started down this path of empowerment for women within the classical music world. Can you talk to me about that particular experience?
Yeah, this was so when I was still a student and I did my first ever international competition. And in fact, my last competition, it put me off a little bit. And we had individual feedback with the adjudicators. And one of them kind of sat me down, very nice, said it in a lovely way, but said they loved my playing. It was very exciting, passionate, all this stuff. But they just felt I needed to play more like a man. And he kind of thought about it. He was like, more like a man. And I remember just being a little bit kind of blindsided by the comment and saying, oh, sorry, what do you mean? I think I kind of laughed, kind of went, ha ha, what do you mean? And they said, you need to play with more power and authority, which obviously is a totally valid musical criticism. And I think it's really important to be able to take that kind of musical criticism. But I did have a problem with it being equated to playing in a masculine way and the idea that that was inevitably better than playing in a feminine way, because I just do not think it is that simple. And it kind of it shook my confidence quite a bit. And another friend of mine, also female in the same competition, was told that one of her pieces was nearly up there with the boys. So it was a very kind of, there was this idea for whatever reason that the male players were just better than the female players. And that was the norm. And I think the Play Like a Girl thing started as a very tongue-in-cheek. I did a Facebook post about it a couple of years later after Marin Alsop talked about how if she does a certain thing, it's girly, whereas if a man does it, it's emotional or something like that. So I did a Facebook post about it and used the hashtag Play Like a Girl and said, actually, I'm just going to play like me and hope that that is what people want to hear.
It sounds like you're providing a great community space to get introduced to the organ. But when you're an organist, it's a pretty lonely pursuit, right? I mean, the very nature of the instrument means you're alone in a church between midnight and 6 a.m. because that's the only time that you can have the space to yourself. But you're TikTok famous for playing the organ, which I have to say is a weird sentence to speak. Millions of people follow you in these midnight practice sessions. They watch you perform. Do you find comfort in having such a large community of fans right there with you through something like TikTok or YouTube?
Yeah, I still can't quite believe it. It's a bit surreal. I think the thing I really love about it is before any of the social media stuff kind of blew up, I had spent quite a long time trying to advocate for the organ and trying to sort of suggest radio programs about it, TV programs about it, things like that. And I just got again and again the response that we'd love to, but nobody really likes the organ. It's a bit of a die instrument. It's not really relevant. Sorry. And so it's quite satisfying now to be able to say, it's relevant. But I think it's the new way that the generation coming up interacts with the world. And it's a really exciting thing. It breaks down the barriers a little bit.
Speaking of breaking barriers, recently you'd find yourself playing at a rave with the electronica band Bonobo. This is definitely new territory for the instrument. What was that experience like for you?
It was phenomenal. I still think it is the best concert experience of my life. And this is a couple of years down the line.
Wow.
I think it still blows my mind on a number of levels. I think firstly, it was so out of my comfort zone. So I've always said, I don't improvise. I have to have the music weeks in advance to make sure I'm properly prepared, all of this stuff. And I'm not someone who, if you ask any of my friends from when I was at school, they would laugh at my lack of knowledge about pop culture. Like, I was a classical musician through and through and didn't really deviate. And so then when I started doing the Albert Hall stuff, I basically said, my dream with this role is to make it so that people can just put the organ into their shows. And we all kind of said, oh yeah, that's a nice dream. It probably won't happen, but we can aim for it. And then sure enough, a month later, I was there practicing in the middle of the night and the band came onto the stage and I didn't realize who they were because I live under a rock. And I just, they shouted up asking if I could play some Bach, the Toccata, and I played it and then invited them up to see the organ. And we ended up chatting. They were like, wouldn't it be cool if you joined our show? I kind of said, well, I am actually free. This was for the next day. And then, so I finished my practice session at 6, saw a text saying, yeah, let's do it. Let's put you in the show. And we just did it in sort of, it was what, 12, 18 hours between that moment and the show itself. And I turned up and waited for the music to arrive on my stand at the beginning of the sound check, having never seen it before. And a lot of it, there was some improvising, and it was so out of what I thought I would ever do. And yet I sat there, and it was the moment the organ came in and the crowd just went nuts because no one was expecting it. I will never, ever, 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 ever forget that energy that just got thrown at the organ. And there's the video of when, because I had my phone filming, and you can see on my face that it goes from like, oh my God, what am I doing here, to this is the best thing in the world.
In those moments when everything is working just right, what does it feel like?
It's like flying. I think that is the best way to describe it. Because I think partly because you are, your only contact with the ground is basically like the bottom of your spine. Everything else is kind of floating. And so it does feel like you're kind of flying through harmony, which is an incredible feeling.
You're the director of music at Pembroke College in Cambridge, where you direct the choirs there. I would imagine being a part of this choral community feels like a perfect complement to the solitary existence you sometimes lead as an organist.
Yeah, I think possibly more importantly, though, it's the reminder of where we all began, because a lot of my work there is working with young singers, as in sort of from the age of 10. And there's nothing quite like having done a concert for 5,000 people and then the next day being working with a 10-year-old singer and thinking, okay, what can I do to help them feel really comfortable in this situation and help hopefully inspire and enthuse them and not put them off music forever.
And have you witnessed that inspiration take hold? Like, have you seen the moment where that switch is flipped in them and you could tell that music really made a difference in their lives?
Yeah, but the thing is, I have seen so many of those transformations. I think one of the most important and sort of rewarding ones personally was a girl who arrived at the age of 11, really shy, turned up for her audition and just cried all the way through, but had an amazing voice. And so she joined the choir, and just seeing how the choir has become her safe space amidst everything else changing in her life. The choir is where she can be herself and feels like she belongs. And then she's now like often doing these massive solos and singing so beautifully. And I remember the first time she did one of these solos and I just cried. And there's nothing quite like that.
The organ or a choir can transform any space that it's in and often encourages a sense of calm and spirituality or excitement. I mean, it really can elicit so many emotions. It's clear what an audience gets from the music that you make, but I'm curious, as the one that provides it, what are you getting from performance?
Oh, it's a really good question. It depends massively on the performance. I think sometimes you just get sheer energy out of it. Say if you're performing a really familiar program, and you just get to rediscover that program on a new instrument with a new audience in a new space. And it just feels like you are just like taking energy from all around you and you walk out on cloud nine and feel great. But I think other times it's like it can be giving yourself a confidence boost or giving yourself a reminder of what you're capable of. Like when you're performing a new piece for the first time, one that perhaps you always thought was going to be out of your reach, and then you perform it and it goes okay. And it's like, I often think about it a bit like a bullseye, a balloon. And it's like, you're just gradually expanding this balloon, but if you go too fast, it will pop. And so it's just like knowing how you can stretch yourself and your technique and all of that. So I think that's another side of it. But then it doesn't always go right. And so then I think it's, you learn so much more about yourself and about what you need as a performer when things don't go right. You learn more when it doesn't go perfectly about hopefully what you can do to avoid that thing happening again, or just realizing, being honest with yourself about, have you done enough work on that particular section of that piece or whatever it is.
So where do you go for musical serenity? Like, where do you go to get the same feelings that your audience members get from attending one of your performances?
I don't know. I don't know if that's what I want from music. I get my joy from participating in music more than listening to it, I think. If I go to concerts, I tend to just be jealous because I want to be part of it. I mean, yes, I listen to music at home, but that tends to be kind of jazz. And I think that's quite common that actually you listen to totally other things because it's what you're doing the rest of the time. You've made me think about things that I haven't kind of thought about before, which is always, it's always nice, isn't it?
Well, thanks so much.
Where do you go to get your energy musically, out of interest?
Yeah, I don't like being asked these questions.
It's hard, isn't it?
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Speaking Soundly. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends about it. Spread the word. Be sure to follow, rate us, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. To keep up on future episodes, follow us on Instagram at SpeakingSNDLY and visit our website, artfulnarrativesmedia.com. Tune in next week as we hear another inspiring artist speaking soundly.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.